I'd like to welcome all of you who have come to celebrate this occasion that we would hope that we would not have to commemorate for a person as young as John Dorney. I hope that this memorial service will be an opportunity for all of us to remember John Dorney in all of his glory, and for those of us who didn't know him, to get some idea of what sort of a person he was, and to make our peace with his untimely death.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your home. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid.
John was a Beatles generation kid, and that's why we played Beatles music for him. That meant a lot of things. He was a kid that was very interested in music from a very early age. We have a picture over here of him as a toddler, about 18 months old. We visited my aunt and uncle, and when we came back, they said, "I've never seen a child that age sit in front of a hi-fi speaker so quietly for so long. Is something wrong with him?" And we said, no, he liked music, and he always did like music. It was important to him all through his life. So if he'd been an 80-year-old Rotarian, we might have played Mighty Fortress Is Our God. But since he was a 27-year-old guy, this is part of him. And it was part of his life with us. And we became Beatles fans, too. When you have a kid who plays Beatles day and night, you learn a lot about the Beatles. Also, he had a very steady hand at a very early age, and we could let him put a record on when he was only four, and as a result, this is his record. And as a result, his records are still in pretty good shape. We're going to play a couple more of them. He liked a lot of different kinds of music. One of them was Beethoven, which is why the Moonlight Sonata, that was his record also. And One of the things we do not have is any tapes of music he made. He made his own music. From the time he was about 12, he sang with a folk rock group, or one or another of them. We tried to dig up a tape, and we just couldn't find it anywhere. And if any of you here today know anything about where any of his music is, either notations or tapes, we would really like to know. We had people check his possessions in Thailand and also in his apartment in San Diego, and there was nothing, so we felt rather disappointed about that. So if any of you know or anyone know anybody he played with and might have information about that, we'd really appreciate hearing it. Well, we're going to start with a very early John. Jenny, I think you can tell us something about the early John.
Okay. This was written in the spring of 1970, and it's called All About Me. My full name is John Gardner Dorney. My friends call me John. My birthday is June 1st. I am 8 years and 11 months old. I'm in the third grade in school. My teacher is Miss Judy Ludlow. The name of my school is Hoyt School. I'm 53 inches tall. I weigh about 67 pounds. My hair is blonde. My eyes are brown. The thing I like best about the way I look is when my hair is combed. I have zero brothers and one sister. My favorite friend is Jack Tim. We like to play baseball and basketball. I have a pet toad. My pet's name is Croak. He lives in our bathtub. The thing I enjoy doing most with my pet is feeding him. He eats mealworms. My favorite color is orange. It reminds me of Halloween. My favorite season of the year is spring. I like spring because it is hot and I can go swimming. The season I like least is winter because it is too cold. Something I enjoy doing after school is basketball. The best book I ever read is Born Free. The part I like best about it is when Elsa was a baby cub. The one thing I can do best is play baseball. The one thing I wish I could do better is play football. I like being my age because I can play basketball very well. I don't like being my age because the big kids fight with me. When I grow up, I'd like to be a scientist because I'm very interested in science. Here is what I might look like when I'm 30 years old. And here he drew a picture of a smiling man with a beard and a cane. One thing that really scares me is when a snake attacks me. One thing that really makes me laugh is lots of jokes and riddles. If I could have any wish in the whole world, my big wish would be, I wish I were rich and would never run out of money at all.
Well, that was John the scholar. There was a John the worker. Pat, you want to read us something from John the Worker? John had a newspaper route. And it's about 12, and it had its ups and downs.
This is a letter he addressed. Dear editor, I am writing to all the people who get the newspapers and like prompt service. They don't know or care that the paper boy wakes up between 4:30 and 5 a.m. in weather that's sometimes minus 25 degrees. His job is a hard, long, and cheaply paid one. If the papers are delivered to the boy late, it is the paper boy who is always blamed, when rightfully the press is at fault. They don't realize how hard the job is. They also do not have any sympathy for the paper boy. All that matters is that they obtain the paper. I do sincerely hope these people will change. Thank you, John Dorney.
And John the poet.
This is titled, Just Before I Sneezed. My nose, it itches. My breath is uneven. No, I can't stand it. I've got to hold it until just the right time. And then, I feel it coming.
When John got to be about 15 or 16, he went to camp, really far away from home. The camp was based in Minnesota, and a big part of their camping was backpacking trip. And he'd never done anything like that. It was pretty exacting. Like all kids at camp, he more or less sent postcards. And we have a couple of those postcards here today to share with you. My brother Bill and David Lake are going to read you some of John's postcards and also some of his camp counselor's comments on John.
This is from July 20th, 1976. Dear Mom and Tim, howdy. This is my third day on the trail, and wow, what scenery. Right now we're about 8 to 9,000 feet up in elevation. Mosquitoes are absolutely horrible, but the mountain view makes up for it. This is definitely the most beautiful country I've ever seen. It so happens there are a lot of grizzly bears around here, but we haven't seen any yet, thank God. Our mountain range is in the Absarokas in Montana. Beautiful. I'll tell you more in my next note. Bye. Love, John. And this is from Thursday, July 29th, the same year. My beloved parents, today is my last day on the trail. We will hike only about 5 miles a day and then drive the bus into a small town to look for a bakery. My first day of real food. I must admit I leave the mountains with mixed feelings. There may never be a more beautiful spot where I spend nearly 2 weeks of my life. On the bus back to Ouija, I'm going to mostly eat and sleep. I wish I'd brought my chess set on the trail. No chess for 10 days. It's driving me nuts. You two and our home and region will also be a sight for sore eyes. The silence here is almost is unsettling, but it's really great lying out in the sun listening to birds without a care in the world. We just had a layover day and I got a great tan in my arms. Boy, did I need the rest. I'm wondering whether my records came in the mail. I don't remember how many I should be getting. Just remember to send back the Kiss album. Hope everything is good at home. See you soon. Love, John. P.S. Mom and Tim, this letter and others may be late, as along the trail there's no mailbox.
Dear Mrs. Dorney, I'm just sending a short note on John's trail experience. John was put in my group because he wanted to be with his friend Doug. We had a tougher trip than the other boys. John, being the smallest in the group, he had a tough time keeping up with the other guys, and sometimes I think this frustrated him. But I think he was surprised after a day was over and proud as to how much he and the group could actually do. So all in all, I think John had a good trip and learned a lot about himself and his capabilities. Sincerely, Kevin Lee.
This is from July 1977. Dear Mom and Tim, I'm mailing this letter from Red Lodge, Montana, and God knows when you'll get it. They didn't have a regular mail pickup. We left on Sunday to get an early start and traveled through Minnesota and North Dakota, which were pretty flat. But Montana is already getting hilly, and I'm looking forward to some great sights. It was 103 degrees when we passed through North Dakota, which is worse than it was in Madison. I passed the time by playing blindfold chess against Doug, who had full sight of the board, and I beat him 3 games in a row. Very tricky. Have you heard anything else from John? I'm going to enjoy seeing Europe, even though I'll only be home about 10 days until I go off again. I miss Madison and Chess Club, but especially you two. On this van, there's not really much to say. Talk to you later, John. Sorry, I couldn't find a mailbox mailed after the trip. This is from July 1977. Dear Mom and T, what a great trip. We had a great group and averaged about 7 miles a day. We left Island Lake and the Beartooth Mountains on day one and left the trail on day two, doing all the walking over rough territory. The food was poor, but on the last day we met some campers who gave us fresh fish. The bugs weren't bad at all, and the territory was the most beautiful I've ever seen. We crossed a stream in our sneakers, saw a group of mountain goats, and climbed as high as 11,600 feet. The air got rather thin there, but no bugs existed. We descended 3,900 feet the last day, and boy, were we beat. I'm going to watch what we eat, Doug and I, on the way back. Really loved the trip, and camp is good too. We'll be back in St. Paul soon, and then home. Love you, John.
August 1977. Dear Mrs. Dorney, I sure enjoyed having John in my group again. He added a lot to the group and was well-liked by everyone. Everybody enjoyed his sense of humor. Boy, what a difference a year makes. John was just about walking the rest of us ragged, and he seems to have grown a lot in maturity. We had just a super group this year and a super trip. I know John learned a lot about the mountains, and I think he's learned a little bit about himself. And I think he liked what he learned. I sure feel good about John and the trip he had. I'm sure glad he came back. He contributed a lot. Say hello to him for me and tell him to stay in touch. Sincerely, Kevin Lee.
John's teen years, he was in and out a lot, and we tried to touch base, and we used the method of the note on the dining room table. At least we hoped to use that method. Most of the time we made connections. Something that we noticed was how the notes changed over the year. And we have a little sample today of the notes on the dining room table.
Mom, please check the brownie pan. It's probably terrible. I had a lot of problems with the corners. Hope you and Tim had a nice time. Love, John. Mom, you may think I'm an idiot. I want you to get me up at 6:15. You may think that is an ungodly hour, but I must finish my math. Love, John.
Mom, I was fired last night. That's why I was so sullen. I'll be up at 7 or so. See you then. It just didn't work out. Sincerely, John. Ma and T, walk is done. I've gone out. We'll be back at 6. Hope you had a good walk. Love, John. P.S. Skating was great.
Mom, I'm off at the laundromat. We'll try to get back within an hour. Have to wash and dry things. See you later. J.G.D. Mom, Ann called. She said her cats have roundworms and she thinks she might have caught them too. She wants to know if your insurance would cover it. She said she would call tomorrow. Love, John.
Mom and Tim, I have departed. Mark has informed me that he has the tools I need for my skates. We went to his house to get them. He will show me how they work and promise to lend them to me. Be back by 6. Love, John. P.S. I thought that when Mark came over, we should leave since you were out of the house.
People, I'm at Ricardo's. Ha ha. 2411 Norwood Place. See you later. J.G.D. Mom, went to play tennis with John and then we have band practice. I had toast and juice and one brownie for lunch. John has invited me for lunch at his house, so don't worry. I'll eat. Love, John.
Mom, I did a load of dishes, so just relax and get some sleep. Say goodnight to Tim for me. See you in the a.m. Love, J.G.D.
Mom, I get in at around 2 last night, and I apologize. The fact is, I fell asleep at Lena's at about 11:30, which was when I had planned to get home by. Once again, I'm very sorry. All the dishes will be done after school immediately. John.
Mom, thank you for putting out a little extra on the dishes. It will make my task easier. Love, John. Mom, thank you very much for the informative phone message you took this morning. I need that info regarding certain times. I'll be with Paul till din-din. Thanks again, J.G.D.
Ma, change of plans. I'm taking Lana out for dinner. Be back later, John.
M and T, I'll be eating at Paul's and then going to a friend's house near the Beltline. I'll call if I'm going to stay for the night, J.G.D.
People, trouble has risen between Lana and her grandmother. She nearly got kicked out of the house, so I'm going to help straighten things out. Sigh. Or at least get them talking. Love, John.
Mom, I think I caught Lana's cold, so I'll be in the neighborhood taking it easy. We'll be in for dinner later. John. People, Paul has invited me to dinner at his house, and we'll be going to Warner Park afterwards. We'll be in touch later. J.G.D.
Mom, I have split in two. We'll be back in to lunch at 1-ish. Lana and I are going to meet at the shops or her house to talk. So I'll be in this neighborhood. She only lives up the street, 1933 Regent. See you later, J.G.D.
Mom, I've eaten and taken pills. See you later this evening or tomorrow. John.
I'm going to have a talk with Lana across the street. Maybe work out afterwards if Mike is home. We'll see you later. If Colin calls, I'll get back to him. Thanks. Mom, John Halton called. He has returned from Spain and fell in love there. He says he would like me to say hi for him. Hi! And would like to pay us a social call soon. J.G.D.
People, I'm out, obviously. See you at 11, obviously. Love, obviously. J.G.D. Mom, a Badger bus will leave tomorrow from Milwaukee at 3 p.m. and arrive there at 4:40. I reserved a room at Holiday Inn for 2 nights, as the lady said there were only a couple left. She was also very stupid, claimed to know nothing about anything. O can get to the hotel by city bus partway, cab the rest. Sorry, but nobody else I know is going there that I could reach or that has a car. Alex Milson said he was taking a bus also. Here are my stats. Entry fee, $25, to be paid in person. Hotel rates, $45, 2 nights. Bus fare, I'll find out tomorrow. This gives you a rough idea. I'll take care of my food and in-city transportation and laundry. Call you at work tomorrow. Love, John.
He had a flair when it came to writing notes. Those were really funny times. Both my kids grew up when the world was changing a whole lot. They grew up during Watergate, and they grew up during the Vietnamese War, and they grew up during a lot of campus strife. And they grew up when the name of the game of marriage was changing a lot, and the rules. And I think that couldn't help but affect them. It certainly left them with a lot of questions, and some of the questions they presented to us, and some of them I think they lived out in their own lives. But I think it was a very hard time to grow up, and most of you who either have kids who grew up then or were kids who grew up then know what I'm talking about. We were very aware of it, and we're even more aware of it now. One of the things I think of is the kind of music that they had then. John was, as always, very much into music. I remember he liked The Dark Side of the Moon. And I remember he still liked his Beethoven. And we had a record by Don McLean called American Pie. And there were a couple of songs we particularly liked from American Pie, so we're going to share them with you now. It wasn't John's type of voice, but he admired McLean's voice very much because McLean had a very pure, beautiful voice and a marvelous delivery and a terrific ability to compose songs, which was something John hoped to do and eventually did do. So let's hear American Pie, huh?
Starry night, paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills, sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now. Starry, starry night, flaming flowers that brightly blaze, swirling clouds in violet haze, reflecting Vincent's eyes of china blue, colors changing hue. Morning fields of amber grain, weathered faces lined in pain, are soothed beneath the artist's loving hand. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now, for they could not love you, but still your love was true. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never meant for one as beautiful as you. Starry, starry night, portraits hung in empty halls, frameless heads on nameless walls, with eyes that watch the world and can't forget. Like the strangers that you've met, the ragged men in ragged clothes, the silver thorn, a bloody rose, lie crushed and broken on the virgin snow. Now I think I know what you tried to say to me, and how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they're not listening still. Perhaps they never will.
Been living in Albuquerque for the last year, and so a lot of you, when you heard about John, wrote to us, and some of you said things to us about John that you remembered, and some of you said things that you thought would comfort us or that had comforted you in situations where you'd lost somebody. And I brought some of them back, and Pat Watkins and Carolyn Briggs are going to read some of them. We'd like to share them with you.
I still retain my first impression of John as an alert, sparkly, and enthusiastic fifth grader who correctly spelled a very difficult word on his first day in class. It was so nice to see and to remember the look of pride, also relief, at being able to impress a new teacher and room full of classmates. I think he felt he belonged after that. I hope so. I hope John attained a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction in his adult life, and that memories of the delightful things he did and discovered will bring you consolation.
I remember him as a bright and delightful boy who seemed to handle himself well and wittily. It's hard to think of him as an adult, but I'm sure he continued to be charming and self-assured.
I remember him as a very intense person, one who cared a lot about his particular interests.
John was a beautiful boy.
I remember so well John's enthusiasm and energy and vitality, the challenge he presented to the adults around him, and how exciting it was to hear of his accomplishments in chess. I'm so glad he was still enjoying that skill and the lovely music he could create.
We have thought about you and about him since we heard last night, remembering him as a
to know that there is light somewhere. To know that in oneself, waiting to be found, there is a light.
I believe we tend to cope with our own personal death by having children, and the death of our children, whom we expect to outlive us, is a rude shock to our own mortality.
I know I speak for my sister and me when I say that we hope you have found some peace, and that we believe John is finally in a place he can call home.
As I look at death, I see my life. As I look at life, I see my death. Together they weave the pattern of my existence. Why should I fear? Death is the longer thread. Life is but a fleeting partner in the cosmic dance.
John is light. You are light. In the beginning, and as long as the universe exists, there is light and only light, and John is of it and in it as truly now as at any time before.
He will always be young and always yours.
And may sunshine and happiness. For the last 20 years of John's life, he had a love affair with chess. My earliest memories of John are of a little boy, 9 or 10 years old, sitting on his bed or on the living room floor with his chessboard, a chess book, and a chess clock, practicing chess moves and replaying chess games. John could practice and play chess hours on end. Chess, therefore, was a major constant and a very important part of John's life. He was a member of the Madison Chess Club, student chess clubs at school, and the United States Chess Association. John played in many chess tournaments in Madison, Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley area, and other locales. One chess tournament John played in was on a trip we took to California to visit Rosemary's father and one of her brothers. John was 16 at the time and had very mixed feelings about going on the trip. Vacationing in California was great, but being away from his friends, and especially what was happening here in Madison, was not. We told John to see if there was a chess tournament he could go to while we were in California. Our reasons were not totally altruistic, but basically it was our way of encouraging John in chess. John found a tournament in Stockton, California. We drove down to Stockton to the tournament. John did fairly well in the event. The high point of his playing was beating the local chess expert. I think he was retired military in the first round of the tournament. John admitted afterwards that his victory was partly due to the local experts underestimating of him as being this out-of-town 16-year-old and underestimating his chess skills. The local expert was, needless to say, very unhappy about it and treated John for the rest of the tournament rather shabbily. He had, to put it politely, somewhat of a prickly personality. Although the local chess expert treated John shabbily, the others there treated John like royalty. I think they enjoyed seeing the local chess expert knock down a couple of pegs. I don't think that it's an exaggeration that although John was an amateur in chess, he was a professional in the best sense of the word in how he approached chess. In chess, John exhibited discipline, focus, intelligence, sportsmanship, attention to detail, integrity, drive, controlled ambition, total acceptance of the rules of the game, and tolerance of others. I never once saw John put down another chess player. John knew that if he was beaten in a chess match, it was because the other player had played better. John was especially tolerant of other chess players, both in how they handled the pressures of a chess match and in many cases, their personal idiosyncrasies. John had particular insight and perception into what motivated people, exhibiting insights into them that often surprised me. The bottom line for John, however, with people and chess, was that the others were chess players, regardless of whether they were 10 years old, 15, 20, 50, had a high school education, or a PhD. Chess was such an integral and important part of John's life that it truly was a given. So much a given that I don't think I ever asked John why he enjoyed chess so much. Besides from it being, for John, simply a nifty game, I have a couple of ideas. Chess was an arena in which John encountered a game in which he accepted the rules, enjoyed the scale of the game, and the interaction with others on a line of equality. Accepted the rules in that John approved of the rules, accepted them totally, and accepted the consequences, that is, either winning or losing the game. John knew if he played better, he would be the victor. There was no doubt about that. If he made a mistake, it was his mistake, totally unattributable to others. John enjoyed the scale of the game because, despite chess's awesome complexity, the game is a finite one as to time, space, and rules. And John liked chess because, in my opinion, it was a game of equality, that John could compete with others one-to-one on an even footing, regardless of the other's age, background, social strata, etc. I am not as confident that John was able to find the balance and focus in other areas of his life, which he found in chess. Life is not a chess game. Life's rules are more numerous, tougher, and less clearly defined. Rewards are not as immediate, often in life having to be deferred. Goals are not as easily identifiable. The bottom life of chess, that is, checkmate, is a given. Bottom life of chess is ever-changing. I often felt that John never resolved his inner turmoil over who he was and what he wanted to be. I have often wished that John could have channeled more of the same positive energies that went into chess into other areas of his life. I often wished that I could have done more to help John in this regard. As we say farewell to John today and our lives go on, I'll always remember John with a chessboard, chess clock, and a chess book. Goodbye, John. My life is more complete having known and loved you. Many have asked Rosemary and I the circumstances surrounding John's death. We do not have complete information. We are still waiting for more information from Thailand and from officials in Washington. When we know more, others will know more. Until then, we would both appreciate if, however well-meaning it is, people do not ask us probing questions, because our information base, to put it in the vernacular, is not complete. Thank you.
We've heard a lot about John's life, but I know it's nothing like as many of you can recall. And at this point, we'd like to ask any of you who would like to recount any of the memories that you have of John or make any comments to do so. And you can either choose to come up here or just do it from your seat. So. Yes, perfect.
I do have memories of John, but I remember hearing about John even before that, probably in 1973 when Rosemary and I became acquainted one night after Play Readers. And we were exchanging information, among other things, about our children. And her son had just been in a chess tournament, and one of mine had just stolen a car. I was trying to make a deal about trading and even suggesting I settle for a gerbil at that point. Those were tough times to keep going up. Later on, when John was about 15 or 16, he did in fact spend a few days on my sofa when Tim and Rosemary had reached one of those gerbil trading stages. And of course he was, you know, just delightful company. Absolutely neat in the extreme, did some cooking for me, and why would anyone have any trouble with him? He was such a wonderful teenager. My particular memory of John, though, was a night at Upper Woods, the fall retreat the Prairie Society goes on every year, and we were in that last And it was one of those awful days in October when it was snowing half the time and raining half the time. And it sort of all stumbled along, tripping over our sleeping bags and trying to find some dry comfort in the cabin. It was pretty late before we really gotten into the bunks. And then John and his friend Richard Kellerman, I mean, they were stand-up comedians. They were absolutely that night. So witty, so funny. Ben Miller, I think, was all of 6 years old, and of course Rosemary and I were the ancient older generation, but we all laughed for a couple of hours on a stormy, miserable October night. And clearly there was in that 15-year-old appreciation for all the absurdities of adults in particular. Such a joy. It was 15 years ago that the service, the memorial service for my daughter, who died in an accident, that something was said that has continued to be one of those particular remarks that has helped me dampen some traveling. And it was Rosemary that said, my goodness, she had more adventures satisfied, more of her thirst for seeing the world. How many of us, no matter how long we live, will ever see some of the places she did? How many of us will ever see time? I'll remember John forever now.
Others with memories who'd like to speak up?
I went to high school with John, and in the daily soap opera type of life that I lived, then I just remember John being very warm and kind and sensitive. Someone that you could always come and talk to, and always have a bright side of things. So sad to see it. I lost contact with him, I guess, after high school. But I'm sure that he always was the same type of person.
I went to high school with John also. We were in a couple of plays together at Malcolm Shabazz, and we would. I think we were too young, but we went to a lot of bars together. I also remember him as being very intelligent. I played him in chess a few times. I think it took about 4 moves. And I didn't play him in chess after that. It wasn't that fun for me. I remember him as being very involved in music also. And mostly, I'm not quite sure what kind of music he liked recently, but he was a headbanger. It was heavy metal, the last I remember of. And I don't, it doesn't really matter what kind of music you like, it's just music in general. And I knew it meant a lot to him, and I'm really messed with that.
Thank you.
John's music was loud. He lived with us, and he was very close to our son. A picture up there, he was his best man for his wedding. And they decided, because the neighbors were complaining of the loud noise coming for our house, that they took 300 egg cartons and stapled them to all the wall and ceiling, that would help the neighbors. Their music was loud. One of their gigs was up in a little dumpy back room up in Adam's Friendship. And we made the trip up to hear them play. And, you know, you kind of bang on your ear, because Dear was loud. We were the only two adults there. The rest of them were their peers. And Dad and I have Dr. Gervaco's Somewhere My Love is very special to us. And when it would come on the radio at home, John was aware of this. So he saw us in the back of from the stage, and he got these musicians that don't know just this loud, loud noise to attempt to play Somewhere My Love. It was the most beautiful that we'll ever hear. He's affected our lives. We do miss him.
Any others who'd like to speak? Okay, thank you.
Many of you already know Dono Nobis Pacem. We've not passed out the music. I'm going to ask everyone to sing it through. Those of you who know it, sing along with me. We'll sing the whole thing through one time. And if you don't know it, once you've heard it, come along or sing along or listen to your neighbor. We'll sing it through as a group. And then I would like to divide with the last four rows all the way across will be group number three. From the four rows on up on this side, group number one. From the far four rows on this side, group number two. And so we'll do it together. I'll start you out as a round. And group number three, I'll end up back there with you. So we'll feel too long.
Oh,
thanks for being here today. We are going to have a meal, as your program tells you, and we do have to use this room to clear it out, so I hope you'll use the time to listen to the music and visit with one another and come and say hi to Tim and me, and also check out the pictures. We tried to put up pictures from every part of John's life, and we hope that all of you who've known him at one time or another will find the John that you knew. I think, 6, 8, 10 minutes probably before we'll be eating.